Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I am joined by Richard Justice, and we are between games 2 and 3 of the 2017 World Series between the Astros and the Dodgers. Series is shifting to Minute Maid Park, and on Thursday, these two clubs had their travel day and received some fatigue questions from some fatigue sports writers. So let's hear some answers right here.
Since we won, like, absolutely, this is going to be a huge swing. You literally are, you know, at the momentum of the next game. I mean, it's 1-1. It doesn't mean anything's decided. Tomorrow's a huge game.
We love playing here. We have so much excitement being here and the electricity and the vibe, and I feel like we feed off of that.
There's a couple guys that I'm thinking through on the DH spot and just kind of really want to dig into a little bit more. You know, McCullers with the curveball. Both guys, him and Morton, are sort of reverse guys over a large sample. We'll kind of think through it a little bit more.
We want the roof closed because we don't want to get rained on. When we can play under the roof, our fans get going. It was one of the loudest stadiums the last series. I expect it to be the same. Momentum one way or the other. We're coming off one of the most epic baseball games in any of our careers, probably for you guys too. And so that feels good.
All right, Richard. So we're heading into game 3 now. The Astros are 6-0 in this ballpark this month. They've been absolutely dominant here in this ballpark. Who has the edge coming in Minute Maid Park?
I would think the Astros. That's a very good question. I wish you hadn't asked me that.
It was kind of a loaded question with the way I set it up, I think.
Yeah. But. Well, you know, as in anything, the starting pitcher is going to dictate everything.
Yeah.
Now, I know what the world is going to say. The world is going to say that Yu Darvish has the edge. He's been great the last 5 starts. He's pitched great in this ballpark. And he knows, the two sides know each other. But nobody's pitching better than Lance McCullers right now. And this was our all-star right-hander. If we'd had this conversation on June 30th, we're going to mention the best pitchers in the American League. It's Chris Sale. It's Lance McCullers. He's right in that conversation. And I think he's back to that point. He went through a long period with shoulder, arm, back, whatever. But he's pretty good, and he's pretty cocky. And he feels like he got overlooked a little bit. Give me the ball. Get out of my way. And one of the things A.J. Hinch is, no pitch count limit on this guy. Whatever Verlander can do, I think the line was the training wheels are off.
Well, he's a special arm, and we have a very special friend joining us now, Allison Footer. Foot, you've seen a lot of McCullers, of course, and he has a streak intact as he goes into this Game 3 assignment. 24 straight curveballs to finish off Game 7 of the LCS. That was such a cool ending. You know, 4 innings of relief for McCullers. To nail that thing down. What are you expecting from him on this stage?
I think that he's going to step up and be very good. It was interesting the night that the Astros clinched the pennant, and Lance said that A.J. Hinch had called him after Game 6. He had just pulled into his driveway, and A.J. said, I know you want to start Game 7. I know you're not, but you're getting the ball. You're probably keeping the ball, and you're probably finishing out the game, so get ready. And he had all this confidence in Lance. And I think earlier on in the postseason, it was more a matter of, is he back full strength? He had so many injury problems. He did not end the season well. There was kind of a question, would he even be on the roster? They put him into that relief role against the Red Sox, and he really stepped up. And I think that AJ kind of felt like this was the first time that he's really been like fully healthy, fully go. We're not going to be like handling it with kid gloves anymore. And so I think that we are, like Richard said, like seeing the Lance McCullers that was the all-star, the guy that we were talking about as being this just superstar in the making. He's obviously not there yet, but putting him in the third spot in the rotation, I think is huge advantage for the Astros.
One thing that stands out to me in this matchup is we mentioned the curveball, and the Dodgers hit 256 off the curveball in 2017, second only to the Houston Astros in terms of that performance, but haven't hit as well against the curveball in the postseason, which, you know, you see some better ones in the postseason. But let's talk about Darvish, Richard. You mentioned, you know, as much as we might read in the momentum of Game 2 and the Astros coming home where they've been so dominant, you're right. Darvish has been very good here. So that's another factor in this Game 3. Yu Darvish is 4-1 with a 2.16 ERA in 41 and two-thirds innings pitched in this ballpark. So obviously, a great amount of history here. You go back to 2013, we came within one out of a perfect game, came within 5 outs of a no-no later that year. So this ballpark's right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, and I think the Astros are not sure if they really know Yu Darvish. And there's great consternation in the Dallas-Fort Worth area over Yu Darvish has made comments that the Dodgers have collaborated much better. The information is much clearer. My game plan is clear, and just the quality of the information is better. And so that to me means that in terms of pitch usage and in terms of pitch location, he's going to be different. And I mean, and when he's good, he's good. You know, the one thing I would say is we're going to know in the first couple of innings, because I think he's a guy that and I know you hear this about everybody, he's got to get on a roll. And I think if you get him early, you get it, shake his confidence, you've got a much, much better chance.
Well, and they probably need length from Darvish, and we'll get into the bullpen situations later, but obviously the short start from Rich Hill in game two, had the off day between games, certainly probably hoping for more length from Darvish than they got with the quick hook of Rich Hill in game two. But Foot, you know, the question came up with A.J. Hinch. It was bound to come up. Momentum. Do you guys have it now after that wild win? Are the Dodgers reeling now? I loved his answer. He basically said, you know, we won, so yeah, momentum exists. If we had lost, I'd say it doesn't exist. What's your take on that in the context of this series and how that's going to work?
Yeah, I don't think that really managers believe in momentum. I don't think it really exists. We're standing here on an off day, and there's not baseball being played, and so that kind of just sort of ends any momentum, and we're in a different city. So basically what it comes down to is the Astros would have been having a major problem if they came home 0-2. It's not insurmountable to be able to overcome that. But now it's series, and so now they have confidence. Their bats came alive. I feel like there was kind of a like poking the sleeping bear when Marwin hit that home run, and all of a sudden they just started looking like the Astros that we had seen all season long. I don't think there's momentum. I just think it's a World Series between the two best teams in baseball, and it's anyone's to win.
I'm talking with two Houstonians here, Richard and Allison. But I know from a national perspective, this will be, for a lot of people, their first real look at this ballpark in this environment post-Hurricane Harvey. And I think the Game 2 win only adds to it versus if it had been a 2-0 hole coming back here at home. But it's bound to be a pretty emotional and raucous environment here for Game 3.
Yeah, we'll ask Allison. She was closer to the floodwaters than me. I just got 48 inches at my house, so I was safe and dry. But I think I think we might have a different view of it. I think it's real. I think the emotion that A.J. Hinch expressed while they were in Tampa playing the Rangers because they couldn't come here, him saying, I wish I could be here. I have buddies in boats that are going around rescuing people. My daughter lives a couple of miles from here. She had guys in pickup trucks going around with rafts on the top saying, what do you need? Now, what color are you? Now, how much money do you make? What do you need? Mm-hmm. One of my nephews got rescued off the side of Interstate 10 in the floodwaters. We all know people who lost everything they own in terms of belongings, and you can drive within a mile of here and there's debris on the side of the road, and you could feel the emotion. The Astros didn't want to come back here or were uncertain about coming back mm-hmm. here, and the mayor, Sylvester Turner, said no, you come back here and we'll just draw a line in the sand and say this is the beginning of the reconstruction. And when those players went next door here to the convention center where 10,000 people at one time had been, and Allison and I walked through the door there and the first table is missing persons, it comes home. It's okay. Real. And right before the doubleheader against the Mets, A.J. Hinch was asked, what are you going to say to get this out of your guys' minds to play with a clear head? He goes, I don't want it out of their minds. We're citizens of this community. They go on that road trip, and George Springer doesn't know whether his house is even around or not. So that is a backdrop that added to the emotion of coming back here at the same time. Everything's connected, every little thing. They did get a guy, Verlander. They got Correa back. They got McCullers back. So everything, you know, and as A.J. has told us many times, we could, at September 1, you can see the finish line. But I don't know how Allison go.
Well, I think that sports is a distraction. It's a wonderful distraction. I think that the emotions were really riding high at the time. And the convention center that Richard was referring to is down the street from here. And the day that the Astros got back and went down there to visit, there were, I think, as high as 10,000 people there. Then it became 8,000, 7,000. They slowly transitioned people out. But it really does hit you when you see all the children that are kind of running around having a good time and the stressed out parents that are standing there like, I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. So in that respect, like, the Astros being good is great and being in the playoffs is great. And it's a distraction. And it brings a community together. I mean, nothing brings a community together more than sports. But it's not going to fix these people's lives. But it is definitely going to take their minds off of what's going on for a while.
And that's what they said. And that was the best part of it all. They didn't say, this is going to fix the city. What they said was just what Joe Torre and Derek Jeter said in the wake of 9/11, that for a couple hours each day, we're going to give people something else to cheer for and something else to think about and maybe rally around. And when you watch the way this team played, Correa and Springer and Altuve, you couldn't help but feel good about yourself watching them play. Did that drain a teaspoon of flood water? No, it didn't. But it did became something to identify with.
And can I just say that Jose Altuve walks into a room and it's it's like Elvis. He is, I mean, more than anybody, he is so identifiable to everybody in this community for different reasons, whether it's being Latino, too small for your age, too small to play sports, whatever it is, this guy just resonates when he walks in, and he was dancing with people at the convention center. It was, and playing soccer with the little kids, so great guy.
Well, they asked Lance McCullers his thoughts about playing for the people of Houston in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, and he had some very good thoughts for the media.
Yeah, well, we had a really great team going into the season, and these fans were behind us from the very start. But when that happened, we were actually in Los Angeles playing the Angels when that happened, and my wife was actually here in our home. So it was very tough and a lot of guys have their wives were here, their families were here, kids. So it was very tough for us to be away. And those difficult days, we wanted to come home. We wanted to see our families, make sure everything was okay. We wanted to help the city of Houston as much as we could. I think the unique part about our group is that everyone really, during that time, genuinely wanted to just do what they could to help the city, whether it was going to see people and trying to lift their spirits, or whether guys were doing their own things with other kind of endeavors that we do off the field with foundations or Dallas, and a lot of people saw first responders those days. We just wanted to get back here and to show the city how much we love them, how much we care about them. And it kind of became something where we rallied around. We still have pictures hanging in our lockers. It's still something that we think about, because people here, they're hardworking people, man, and they went through something that a lot of people can't understand. A lot of people lost everything. So for us to be able to just play baseball for a couple hours, and for those people to be able to have a little bit of joy to get away from what they were having to go through is pretty special to be able to give that to them.
So we know it's going to be emotional for Game 3 at Minute Maid Park. It's also going to be loud. The roof is bound to be closed. I know the Astros prefer it closed. They made that very clear in the media sessions on the travel day. Footer, you can just kind of speak to what this building is like when it is packed. When it is raucous, it's quite an environment.
Yeah, it's really loud. It's hard to really explain how much of a difference that roof makes when you trap the noise. And I use the example that's very painful, actually, for Astros fans to look back on. I'll just spend a minute. But in the LCS, when the Astros were very, very close to clinching the pennant over the Cardinals, and then Albert Pujols hit the home run, right before that happened, I remember, and this is before Bose headphones, so my ears were just exposed to everything, and I felt like the roof was coming down on my head, and it felt like it was so loud that I actually could not think. And I remember actually Richard said that your hands were shaking so much because you were about to capture this moment, you didn't really know how to, and it was so loud that it was just so hard to even concentrate. So that is what happens when really good things happen in the ballpark,
And it keeps the sound in.
Well, and we heard it when they clinched the pennant here, which they had not clinched a pennant here before, and I realized just how loud it is. Yankee Stadium is really loud, but I think this could be louder.
That Pujols home run before that, the 20 minutes before that, the home team had won the pennant and was going to the World Series. And you have never felt anything like it. The whole building felt like it was shaking. And that's one of those moments, you know, you've seen them in Cleveland. That's one of those moments that are special in sports, you remember. And then Albert robbed us of our joy.
But it makes you understand why the players would have that as their preference, you know, to have it close and to create that home field environment.
Dallas Keuchel told the young players, get ready, boys. It's going to sound like 90,000 people when the roof is closed. When the roof is open, it sounds like 8,000.
No, I don't know that.
Does it play significantly different?
Does it play significantly different?
Like between the roof being open and closed? I don't think so. I mean, the ball might carry a little bit more when it's open, but I don't think – I mean, to be honest with you
–
really,
you, Darvish, and Lance McCullers, some of them.
It's closed so much, and I think that we do need to keep that in mind, that it closes like end of May, and it really doesn't open again. And so basically the entire season, it's closed. And
it's
so
rare that it's open.
Yeah, so it's really nice in April and part of May. They really push it. Sometimes they push it into June, and then it's just sweltering. But for the most part, the only thing that we're truly used to is when the roof is closed.
Well, I'm excited for the environment here. I'm excited for the air conditioning here after those first two games at Dodger Stadium with temperatures upwards of triple digits. So, yeah, it should be a very cool environment. Allison Footer will be there. We want to thank her for being here and joining us on the Morning Lineup podcast. Thank you, Footer.
Thank you for having me.
playing at Minute Maid Park, it's not just about the AC, like I mentioned. It's also about the DH, Richard. The DH is back in play now for this World Series. And, you know, obviously in these circumstances, the American League team is built for this. They're built for it all year. You got Evan Gattis, Carlos Beltran. You know, these guys are going to have more opportunity now in this series.
Yeah, and you don't have to watch the pitcher basically change the outcome of an inning by not being able to even get a bunt down. It's just different when you're not – it's not accustomed to playing it. I guess the Dodgers will put – who do you think? Charlie Culberson out there, someone like that? I mean, well, for when the series started, I thought it was going to be Corey Seager, but I think Dave Roberts just made it clear Corey's passed the test and he's going to play shortstop.
Yeah, that was a big unknown going into this series. How would his back tolerate that? But they seem to think he's ready to – he's still fine to be out there in the field. So, you know, probably Yasmani Grandal, Andre Ethier – Jock Peterson are probably your top DH options on that Dodger club. But yeah, as I said, I mean, the American League team is built for this. The national team is not. It's a compromise. There's no doubt about it.
Do you think it gives the how much better does it make the Dodgers? Or the Dodgers is the advantage in this to the Astros because they're a DH team. They have two DHs on the roster.
I think so. I always lean towards that. I always lean towards the biggest advantage in a World Series is the National League team in a National League park. You know, because their pitchers are more accustomed to hitting anyway. But two, it's just a fundamental change for the American League team that's built in some cases around that DH. You don't see that quite as much anymore. There's not too many David Ortizes in the world, but very much built to have that DH.
That's funny because when Andrew Friedman, the Dodgers president of baseball operations, when he was in Tampa, he did a study and found out basically there are no more DHs.
Yeah.
David Ortiz is gone, the DH is done, and you just use it as an extra player to rotate. And I guess that's what the Dodgers will do. And I would think if you're asking Andrew today, he would say we're going to be just as productive otherwise. But, you know, Evan Gattis is a guy that potentially can impact games. So, and Carlos, both Gattis and Beltran have impacted games during the postseason. But then Culberson and Jock Peterson have as well.
Yeah, and Peterson hit a home run. It gets lost in the shuffle in that game too. But Jock Peterson homered for the first time since I believe it was July 24th. And that was a huge moment in that game at
like
the time.
7 years
feels
ago.
Like a very long time. It feels like several World Series ago. But it did happen, folks. It did happen. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Evan Gattis. He had a big home run in Game 7 of the ALCS, and Carlos Beltran playing for that, you know, elusive first World Series ring. Both those guys are such great stories. So you could certainly see one of those two guys rising the occasion here in these three games at Minute Maid.
Yeah, and especially Gattis is a guy that, when he gets hot, I mean, he really can do damage. And it doesn't matter if it's a right-hander or a left-hander. So they look like a much better team when he's in the lineup. And you know, Carlos Beltran is a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame and still has moments left in him.
So we won't have to see any pitching changes revolving around the pitcher spot in the batting order, and that's always a good thing. You can make the decision on the merit of how the guy is pitching, as opposed to these other factors, like as came into the case with Justin Verlander in Game 2. So now it's just straight, you know, normal American League-style bullpen maneuvering. The bullpens are, of course, a very big deal in this series. They'll continue to be a very big deal in this series. You know, the Dodgers, Dave Roberts is taking a lot of heat. I see it at least on social media for taking Rich Hill out after four innings. I understood the move, especially with what the Astros had coming up in the order. But you know, the byproduct of that is they go on to play 11 innings. The bullpen has been used quite a bit already in this series. They certainly benefit from that day off. They needed that day off.
Yeah, well, they won 112 games. They basically have done it the same way. Of all the 10 postseason teams, only the Twins got less out of their starters. And I think other than Kershaw and maybe Darvish, I think anybody else he throws out there, and I don't think we know who that's going to be in Game 4, is not going to go deep into a game. And with Rich Hill, you can say, well, he should have left him out there longer. But his thing is, I'm going to let Rich Hill face every hitter twice, and I'm not going to go a third time around. The Dodgers base decisions like that on data. And believe me, that's not Dave's decision. Dave is not operating in a silo on a decision like that. And it's worked. Andrew's whole thing was to build a deep bullpen and a deep everyday lineup and be able to move people around.
Well, and that's why Rich Hill was starting Game 2. You know, it was built around then you have the off day afterwards. So if you do tax your bullpen, then you have the off day, and then Yu Darvish looming in Game 3. So, but obviously, three games in 3 days, as we said earlier, they'd certainly like to see some length from Yu Darvish. But what do you think about Kenley Jansen's mindset right now? This guy is so – we're not used to seeing what we saw the other night. You know, a flat cutter and Marwin Gonzalez takes him deep, and that was such a unusual sight. But you know, how does he regroup from that on this particular stage?
Yeah, you know, the Astros have got a pretty good roll going. They've beaten Chris Sale, they've beaten Craig Kimbrell, they've beaten Kenley Jansen, and I think that what separates the good closers from the great ones is you forget yesterday. You have to be able to put it past you. And I think Kenley Jansen has so much confidence in the way he goes about his business. And frankly, that pitch, as someone was telling us, it missed by 6 inches. He doesn't miss by 6 inches that much. And even when you do miss by 6 inches, the ball doesn't fly over the wall that often. And I think you have to be able to take a deep breath, take a day off, have a nice dinner, and come back out. And when they need you today, go, I'm going to be the same guy. I mean, if we're talking today, bullpen advantage, to me, I don't know if you agree with this, is still with the Dodgers.
I think so, too. Ultimately, I do think it's a deeper group. But, you know, the conversation could be changing just because of, you know, things changing within the Astros' complexion. We saw it in Game 2. You know, A.J. Hinch, you touched on this after Game 2 when we were talking. He has to trust those guys. Those are the guys that got him this far. And Chris Devinsky in particular finishing off that game, that was a huge moment for him.
Yeah, it was a huge moment. And I think we saw it. He's now pitched in both games and been pretty effective in one. He did give up a home run. But he got him out of it. And that's what they needed him to do. And Will Harris has looked pretty good. Those were the keys. And now Joe Musgrove has been back to throwing strikes. The key is if you've got a two-run lead in the ninth, do you trust Ken Giles? Now, I know what A.J. Hinch is going to say. I don't abandon my players. I didn't abandon George Springer. I'm not going to abandon this guy. But I would hope you would stop with the six-out saves. I don't know what has gotten into guys. Well, what was Wade Davis? Seven outs in once? I mean, yep. You've got to go back. You did play it a certain way the whole – I understand if it's an elimination game and you got Mariano Rivera, but there are not many Mariano Riveras right. That can give you three or four innings. So I think you got to play it normally, and we'll just see if they do that.
Well, and the Wade Davis thing with Joe Maddon and the Cubs was this is the last guy he trusted, basically. So he was going to ride him for all he was worth and did that in Game 5 of the NLDS and Game 2 of the NLCS. The difference with Giles is Giles just hasn't been at his best on this stage. So, you know, I certainly expect, you know, A.J. to still have ultimate confidence in him, but I think you're absolutely right. Don't ride him too hard here.
No, we were getting on Twitter, why doesn't he move Springer down the lineup? Oh, no. You don't do that in the 170th game of the season or whatever it is. And there was never a chance he was going to do that. But I do think he'll play the matchups in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And if it gets to the ninth inning and there's a left-hander there and you've got Devinsky all good to go, you might do something like that. But then that opens a can of worms. You don't want to open it. But you only need three more wins, and we can discuss it after three more wins.
Well, there are always ties between teams when you get to the postseason stage, always these interesting little storylines. And, Richard, you wrote a really nice storyline, which is Andrew Friedman, president of baseball operations for the Dodgers, is a Houston boy. Talk about that.
And the Astros have tried to hire him multiple times.
They have. I do remember, I believe it was after 2011.
They got a guy named Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah,
that worked out, too.
It worked out pretty well for them. I think it worked out best for everybody. So did he discuss that with you, that decision?
No, that's a topic we don't discuss. He grew up here. His dad, Kenny, is a lawyer here. He's on the Sports Authority, very prominent in the city, helped get this ballpark built. And Toyota Center just down the street got that built. Andrew's line about his life growing up was, other kids went to summer camp, I went to baseball camp. He played baseball at Tulane. But what he did was he hung around hotels where teams stayed, got to know every player. He was at the Astrodome so much that he had the run of the place because everybody thought he was a player's kid. And his dad, Kenny, would show up for a game and there would be, in the seat, would be a glove a player had given him, a pair of shoes a player had given him, a bat. And the best one was he would... he once gave Tim Raines 150 of his rookie cards and said, would you sign these? Tim Raines took those cards back to his hotel room, signed 150 cards for that kid, and brought them back out there. Andrew upstairs would arrange baseball cards and make trades and all of that stuff. He goes to Wall Street after he graduates from Tulane, meets a guy named Stuart Sternberg, who bought the Rays, and said, hey, let's see if this thing works. Analytics, data-driven decisions, and as you know, his legacy led the Rays, who had never done, even made a ripple in the pond. He led them to four playoff appearances and a World Series, and then went to L.A. 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now here the Dodgers are in their first World Series in 29 years. He said he's finding out. Andrew said he's finding out who his real friends are, because some of them can't help but root for the Astros.
Yeah.
We love you, Andrew, but no, not on Friday.
Well, it must be so strange to get to the pinnacle of your career, to get back to, you got to the World Series with the Rays, of course, but to get back to this point and then to see your boyhood team, your childhood team. I know what that's like. You know what that's like, the team that first identifies with your heart. You see the logo. It means something to you. So
he said that's surreal, and I'm trying to keep that out. And I'm trying to focus on what we have to do, and I'll reflect on it later. But he's been here when the Rays would come here. He's been here before as an opposing part of the opposing team. But it will be strange, and it's an interesting little twist. And how would things have worked out if the Astros had been able to lure him? What would have happened to the Dodgers?
Sure.
What would have been the path of other teams?
Maybe Jeff Luno's with the Dodgers for all
Maybe
we know.
Jeff Luno's
but there's
running
something
the
in
Dodgers.
The water in Houston, though, when it comes to sports and analytics. You know, the Houston Rockets and Jeff Luno and the Andrew Friedman pedigree.
Yes, I was standing outside the draft room with the Rockets a few years ago, and when the draft ends, out walks the general manager, Daryl Morey, who brought analytics
right.
to the NBA, and trailing him was Mr. Andrew Friedman. And I said, what are you guys doing? He goes, well, you want to learn about how everybody looks at decision-making. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're going out for a beer. And I was like, oh, the three of us, that'll be great. But it turned out it was only the two of us.
That's interesting. Well, I think you and I can go out for a beer
yeah,
now in,
yeah.
in advance of...
We can discuss analytics.
Absolutely. I'm sure that'll come up.
We can discuss why Andrew Friedman didn't invite me.
All right. Good stuff, as always, from Richard Justice. We are excited for Game 3 of the World Series here at Minute Maid Park. Thank you for tuning in. This has been the Morning Lineup Podcast.